What happens when you're a fine, dignified mother and you go to a church and all of a sudden the wind of God sweeps you in the air, literally to another place in the church? This isn't supposed to happen. And then you're driving your car and God speaks to you at age 70 and says, I want you to write now. Roberta Simpson, in addition to everything else I just said about you, you're Jewish.
Yes.
So let me take you back a little bit. You're married, you have twins, and tragedy struck. What happened?
Well, I had two children already, and they were quite young, and I had twins. I didn't know I was having twins. And yet I felt so strange all through the pregnancy. Kept asking the doctor, what's wrong? Nothing, you're fine. And then when I was 6 months and a week pregnant, I was rushed into the hospital, my water had broken, and I delivered twins. And the strange thing was that when the first baby came, I still had a big tummy up in the air, and the doctor patted it and said, there's another one coming. And all I could think about was, I don't have enough diapers for two babies. And I wasn't due anyway. But it was a tragedy. I wasn't expecting twins. My husband wanted twins. I don't know any other man in the world that wanted twins. And I had them just briefly because they had to rush them to another hospital. It was rainy, it was cool, and they had to put them in an incubator. And just when they got the incubator warm, the baby, second baby died. Mm. The first baby was only 2¼ pounds, and the second baby was 3. So I have a miracle child. And she's now 40 and has two wonderful children of her own.
Okay, let's take you back to a day. I think there might have been an insurance agent in your home. You've just gone through this tragedy of losing one of your twins. And the other is on the incubator, and everything's going on in your life. And he invites you to his church. Why in the world did you go?
Well, my husband was always a churchgoer, and he had an Anglican mother and a Catholic father, and on Sunday he had to go to both churches. But just recently in our lives, he had made a commitment to the Lord to walk with him and serve him, but I didn't know what that meant at the time. Our little girl, our twin girl, had just come home the day before, and we had been invited to go to church, and we went because my husband wanted to go. And I was interested. I thought, you know, I had faith in God. I believed in him. I wasn't too sure. I just thought Jesus was a man who was good and
Well, we Jews are taught that he's even a prophet, but
yes,
certainly not the Son of God.
No.
So tell me your first recollections when you walk into this church. Did you like it?
No.
No?
No.
Tell me
They
about
had
it.
Drums, and I thought, I mean, I didn't know anything about churches, but drums and they
had... At the show, we don't have drums.
No. And then they had a quartet that sang, and I thought they were pretty lousy, you know. I was so critical. And my two other children were with me, and it was very hot, and they fell asleep, and one was asleep on one leg, and the other was asleep on my other leg, and I felt very uncomfortable. And it was a very kind of loud, raucous church. It was a Pentecostal church. And then the pastor got up to speak, and I thought it was just, I did not like it, Sid. But I was there because I loved my husband, and I went with him.
Well, you were a nice wife.
Yes.
But then the unexpected happened. What
yes.
happened?
Well, at the very end of the message, the pastor said, where two or more gathered in Jesus' name, he's in the midst. And I'd never heard that before, but my ears, something stirred in me. And he went on to say, he's the one that can change your life, and you can be a different person, and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. It was a long time ago now. And something stirred in my heart, and all of a sudden, it's a very large church. I saw Jesus come from one end by the altar, walking right through the church by the altar. And I knew it was Jesus, and I knew he was the one I needed in my life. And I knew that he, all of a sudden I realized I had a bitter heart. I was bitter over my baby's death. I would every night cry out to God and say, God, why? Why has this happened to me? Why? And But in an instant, I knew he's the one I needed. And he didn't look at me, but he had this beautiful smile on his face. He had a face of love. And his stride, you know, the way he walked across the church, it was purposeful, and it was just wonderful. It was something I didn't want to tell anybody because I thought they would think I was wacko, but it really happened.
Out of curiosity, it was wonderful, but what did you feel inside when you see Jesus, who we Jews have been taught is not our Messiah? You had revelation knowledge, you knew he was. What did you feel inside?
Excited. I just knew that my life was going to be totally different.
For sure. Now, out of curiosity, tell me what happened when you, who was the first person you told about this experience?
My husband. I didn't dare tell anybody else. And I didn't tell him either for a couple of days.
So, and how did he react?
Well, I think he was a bit startled. I don't think he'd ever heard of such a thing happening before. But he knew it was real because I was different and I was hungry for God. And, you know, right away I started reading books and God began to bring people into our lives that knew him and would help us and teach us. And but, you know, from the very beginning, I wanted things. The church wasn't Jewish enough for me. The first book in the Bible I read was the book of Revelation. That's pretty frightening.
That would do it to most
people. And then the first book I read was Tortured for Christ by Richard Wurmbrand. And then I read Why Revival Tarries and The Cross and the Switchblade, all one after the other. And I believe, looking back now, God wanted me to be real. He wanted me to, you know, I'd wasted a lot of years in my life. I think the one regret when this all happened to me was, why didn't this happen when I was younger?
Well, why won't it happen when you're younger? It's going to, don't go away. You're going to find out how a 70-plus-year-old grandmother is given orders to write from God.
We'll be right back to It's Supernatural. We now return to It's Supernatural.
Hello, Sid Roth here with Roberta Simpson. And Roberta, you cannot tell me that story enough. As a Jewish person, the last thing in the world you wanted to do was know Jesus was the Messiah. Last thing you wanted, you hated that church. You couldn't wait to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And tell me what you saw.
I saw Jesus, the Messiah.
Tell me what he was doing.
He was walking across the church by the altar, and it looked like he just had love and happiness on his face for everybody that was there. And he was walking across there with a purpose, and I knew he was the one I needed in my life.
So Roberta loved to tell stories. She's a storyteller. So she thought, and she liked to, you did writing letters to the editor. On what subject would you write articles?
Israel and the Jewish people, and, you know, whenever there was anything anti-Semitic or anything negative, you know, real lies, as I call them, I would write letters to The Advocate and The Nation, and those are our two main newspapers, and that was my...
All right, so you took a writing course, and you figure, well, maybe I'll refine this, but the professor really crushed you. What did he say about your writing?
Well, he took my paper, which I thought was quite nice, and he just scribbled it up and made horrible comments, and at the bottom he said, you can't write. And then he had the audacity to ask me, I hope I didn't discourage you, did I?
So you're driving your car along, minding your own business.
Years later.
And you hear from God. Mm-hmm. So you began to actually hear God speak to you.
Yes.
What did he say?
Just these four words, you can now write. And the now was emphasized. And I knew it was him. It was just that still voice in my head. And an excitement rose up in me. And a joy.
So I just, did you take another writing course or?
No. No,
what,
I wasn't.
What did you do?
I went home and I wrote my first story.
You know, I don't know whether it's just us Jewish people, but the same thing happened with me. Mm-hmm. The minute God told me to do something, I did it.
You know, if we're not obedient, we don't get any. I look back now, Sid, and I think how scary it would have been if I had maybe thought, yes, I'll do this, and then got home, and doubt might have overtaken me, and, oh, I can't do this, I was told I couldn't write. But there was a joy in my spirit, and I sat down at that computer immediately after I got home, and started writing, and I haven't stopped. I mean, this is just...
And I've got it right here, Nana's Bible Stories, and I love putting, I mean, each story has a message. Mm-hmm. One message is on courage, another is on healing, mm-hmm. another is on love, and the most important one on how to know God. Just kind of paraphrase for me about my favorite, the butterfly in the cross.
Okay. Well, to begin with, I used all my children's, my grandchildren's names in the stories. And when I first started, I started with the lost sheep. And I used my oldest grandson's name, Rafi. And if I'd known it was going to be a book with a lot of stories, I would never have made my grandchild a sheep. But I went to my little granddaughter, Alexandra, and she was 6 at the time. And I said to her, what would you like to be in a story? What is your favorite story? She says, I don't know. I said, would you like to be Queen Esther's best friend and live in a palace? You know, little girls like to be princesses. She said, no, don't want to be that. I said, well, what would you like to be? I want to be a butterfly. So I thought, there's no butterfly stories in the Bible. Of course, I didn't tell her that. And how narrow-minded we can be sometimes, you know, because of course there would have been butterflies. There are butterflies in Israel. And then she really shook me and she said, I want to be a butterfly at the crucifixion. And I do a lot of research. When I write the stories, I go into the biblical accounts. I don't change anything. But when I'm, like for instance, I'm writing a story on a butterfly, I don't know anything about butterflies. So I went to Google and looked up mm-hmm. butterflies and found that the largest butterfly in the world is called the Queen Alexandra. Well, that blew my mind, because it was another sign that God was in it. He knew I was going to have a granddaughter called Alexandra, mm-hmm. and that one day I'd write a story about a butterfly who got stuck on the cross by a splinter, and a drop of blood came down and freed her. And then she changes color, which represents when we would come to Jesus and ask him into our lives and hearts, he changes us and we're different.
Roberta, at 70 plus, how can you even think about starting a career and coming out with beautiful books like this? The paintings in here are so beautiful, and there's even a CD of Sheila Walsh mm-hmm. reading, in case you parents are lazy and you don't want to read to your children, but I think you should read to your children. Oh, what do you figure God wants out of this?
Well, I believe two things. I believe that many people will come to know Jesus. Many people will put their faith in him. And I want children to really know him as they should. You know, sometimes they learn stories in Sunday school. But I've tried to write in such a way that children can identify with the characters. And, well, maybe not a butterfly, but the butterfly tells a story about the crucifixion. But the little boy that gave Jesus the loaves and the fish, there's nothing much said about him. But they can read the story about him and say to themselves, I can be like that. I can follow him.
But can they fly through the air? I mean, literally, because the power of God touches them. That's what happened to Roberta. She went to a meeting, and were you hungry? Are you hungry for God, Roberta?
Oh, said, I'm so starving, and I always have been. This is the thing. I've always wanted more.
Me too. I don't understand backsliders.
I don't either.
When she flew through the air, I believe this presence of God, as she explains it to you, is just going to hit you right where you are right now. Don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment.
We'll be right back to It's Supernatural. We now return to It's Supernatural.
Hello, Sid Roth here with Roberta Simpson. And Roberta, I went out to the Brownsville Revival. As a matter of fact, I am as hungry, maybe hungrier than you. I don't know whether hungry or not, but I went to all these places. I went to all of the revivals, and Steve Hill became a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. He was the primary speaker there at the Brownsville Church in Pensacola, Florida. And you would literally run after, they were supposed to come to you.
Yes.
But you would, why would you run after them? Aren't you too dignified for that?
Oh, listen, I'm not a very dignified person. My husband will always tell you that He's the quiet one of the family, but not me. But, you know, I was there only for a few days at a time, and I couldn't waste time because I was from Barbados. I traveled 9 hours and 3 planes to get to Pensacola.
Tell me about the time that you don't even know exactly what happened, but people reported what they saw.
Yes, I heard it. Well, I, you know, as you said, I would run, but I have jumped over pews there to just get to where
you're
I wanted
right, you're
to get.
Not very dignified.
No,
sorry, wrong image.
I would wear the proper attire and I would climb over the pews and I would go where I saw something happening. And this particular
I
time.
I wish you all were as hungry for God as Roberta is. And I pray that the presence of God just overtake you, that you will hunger and thirst for righteousness, and God says you will be filled. So you're hungering and thirsting and you're running over the pews, and then what
yes.
happened?
Well, I had to go to the opposite side of the church from where I was sitting, and I pushed my way through the crowd, and this guy laid his hand on me. I don't know if it was Steve or Mike Brown or the pastor. I don't remember that. But all I know is I heard this man say, look at that woman flying through the air. And I just flew through the air and I was down on the ground and I was there for a long time and I couldn't get up. I had to crawl back to my seat. I mean, if that's not a humbling experience.
Why couldn't you get up?
The power of God and the presence of God. I think that's what I loved about that revival. I remember when we first went. Well, Ward and Lydia, my son Ward, went first, and then the whole family went, except one daughter who was really rebellious at that time, but she's fine now. But my oldest grandson, who was only 12 at the time, he came running to the front after the service, and he said, Nana, what is this? What am I feeling? And, you know, it was the presence of God. He knew that there was something there he'd never experienced, a 12-year-old. And that was what was so wonderful, the presence of God. Sometimes I'd feel rain on my face.
Rain?
And rain.
You, like drops falling
no,
on you?
No, this fine mist. Like, it's very hard to explain, like a mist of rain.
I felt the same, I know.
And it was the presence of God and the power of God. God was there. You'd walk into that service and God's presence was there. And that's what I hunger for, is the presence of God. I heard Heidi Baker say, if you go to a meeting, the presence of God is there, well, you could as well go to the tavern or somewhere, because what's the point without God's presence?
And let me tell you something, God's presence is on this set, and Roberta has been having dreams and visions, but there was one in particular, Roberta, mm-hmm. about the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Well, that would have to be like 25 or 30 years ago now, but it's as real to me now as it was then. And I was traveling in Canada. I was very uncomfortable during the night, and I fell asleep eventually. And I had this dream, and in the dream, I looked up and saw this blinding light from heaven. And I heard this voice saying to me, Roberta, my perfect will is for you to minister to Jewish people. And I said, oh no, God, no. And I looked up and I could see like a throne. I could not see the person on it, but like an outline, but this bright, bright light that was blinding. And you know, I'm sure God did it so that I would know exactly, because at the bottom of this throne was the throne of God. I saw the writing, the throne of God. And 3 times he said that to me, and all 3 times I said, no, God. But then, all of a sudden, a fear came upon me, and I thought, because he said, my perfect will. And, you know, if we're not in his perfect will, we don't have the peace. I want to be in God's perfect will every day. You know, every day I say, Lord, I want to walk in your will today. I just want to do the things you want me to do and be the person you want me to be. And so I kind of argued, but then I said, Lord, if that is what you want me to do, I'll do it. But you will have to show me how. Because, you know, like...
Yeah, you know, Roberta, going back to the early 70s when you saw Jesus and mm-hmm. had to become a believer in the Messiah, mm-hmm. And when I was rescued from the despair of the New Age, mm-hmm. and I literally was going to die, And the presence of God came in my room and revealed Jesus to me. There was a move of God's Spirit about that time among Jewish people. Many of the leaders of the Messianic Jewish movement today came to the Lord at that time. But just as that door opened, it slammed shut. Yes. And what I believe, Roberta, the reason you're sharing that word from God now, after all of these years, is the rain is beginning to fall on Jewish people. I have friends that have Messianic Jewish congregations in Israel, and they tell me every week that Sabras, that's native-born Israelis, are coming to the Lord, not just Jewish people, but Muslims, both. I mean, we're cousins, Mishpacha.
Yeah. Yes.
That both people groups, there's like a window of opportunity. I'm going to put you on the spot, since you told me you were spontaneous. I want you to look at the camera and talk to a Jewish person about why Jesus is the Messiah.
Well, apart from the scriptures, it's all there. It's written in your book that he is Mashiach. And we were taught from young to expect him to come, and he has come already. And I just want to tell you, it is the most exciting thing, because I've been on both sides. It's the most exciting thing to be a Messianic Jewish person, to believe that Yeshua, Jesus, is the Messiah, to follow him. He is the healer. He is the deliverer. Whatever your need is today, you might be sick. You might be going through pain and confusion and emotional stress. And he's the healer. He is the one. He's the person who he said he is. He's the Son of God. He is everything to me.
And you can be like that butterfly that is stuck to the cross, but better than that. You can be a person that the Messiah of Israel will say, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. This earth is going to shake one more time. You don't have to be a mental giant to realize that. But you will be kept in perfect peace if you will keep your eyes on the Messiah of Israel. The one that came, lived as a man, and according to Isaiah, bore your sins and sicknesses on himself. If he bore it on himself, why are you bearing it? Do you know the word sickness in the Greek means evil? He took that evil upon himself. And by his stripes, his wounds, where his blood came, and even the Talmud and the book of Leviticus say, without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sin. Either Jesus is our Messiah, or we have no forgiveness of sin. That's the deal. And as far as I'm concerned, if you like your life the way it is, you're meshuggah. I know. But if you want to know God, not religion, if you're Muslim, stay Muslim. If you're Jewish, stay Jewish. Come to know God and be obedient to him, and he will give you the reason why you're living, the purpose of life. L'chaim.